Hi, welcome to Chosen Voices, a podcast created by Chosen Vessels to encourage, equip, and empower leaders around the globe. I'm your host, Becca Baxter, and this is Chosen Voices. Today on the podcast, we have a very dear friend of mine from Sighișoara, Romania. Her name is Adela, and I'm so excited for you to hear her story of growing up in Romania, as well as her testimony of God's goodness in her life. Here's my conversation with my sweet friend, Adela.
Hi.
Hi. It's great to have you on the podcast today, Adela. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So why don't we start off with you just introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about you?
Okay. So just like you said, my name is Adela. I'm actually 33 years old right now. Actually, I'll be 34 in September. I am married and I have a baby girl named Thea, and she's 4 months. And actually, we are kind of in a different phase of in our lives right now. But for right now, I am at home with my baby.
So you are from where?
Yes. I did not say that. Sorry about that. I'm from Romania, and I live in a town called Sighișoara, and this region is known in the world, if I can say that, by the name of Transylvania. So I think many, many people heard about that, you know, about the famous Dracula and all that. So it's kind of cool to live in this town where we have a citadel and we have a lot of people coming in and out, and it's more or less in the center of the country. So that is cool too, because, you know, in 8 hours, let's say we can get to the beach where we have an opening to the Black Sea, or in a few hours we can go to the mountains, and that's nice.
So if you were going to describe Sighișoara for people that are trying to envision it, how would you describe it?
Well, I would describe it as a little town with, like I said, with a beautiful citadel that was built in the 13th, 14th century by Saxons. They're basically the German people of our days. So you can see a very beautiful architecture walking around the citadel and the old town. And I think a very interesting fact about this town and this region is that besides Romanians, we have Germans, we have, or Saxons, Hungarians, and Roma people. We all live in this town and in this region. So I think it's kind of cool to walk on the streets of Sighișoara, and you can hear, of course, Romanian, but you hear German, you hear English a lot because of tourists and all kinds of languages.
So one of my favorite parts about visiting too was all the different languages. So how would you say those four different main groups being in this area, how would you say that's affected the culture of town and of Romania in general?
Oh, well, for sure we've been influenced in many ways by all these cultures, not just the language, but even the food. You know, we have specific foods that have been introduced by the Saxons or the Germans or Hungarians. And these specific foods, you can find them here in this region and not in other parts of the country. So I think that's pretty awesome. And in the same time, here and there over the history, there's been like tensions between these groups and even some kind of, not rivalry, but just, yeah, tensions, I suppose, between Hungarians and Romanians, between Roma people and the rest of the world in a way. And
you mentioned Romanian history, and there is a huge monumental thing that happened in history not too far back, and in 1989, the Communist Revolution, and a lot of people have a hard time contextualizing what that might be like or have looked like. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to kind of speak into that time frame for you personally, but also for the country.
I mean, I can share a little bit. I was three-ish when the revolution happened, just like you said, in 1989. So I could share a little bit of my own experience and what I remember and what I lived. And yeah, so even though, like I said, I was three in 89, but after the revolution, when the communism went down, for some time, the system still worked the same way. Because you can imagine, even if something is taken down, you can just come up with something else in a minute. So I still remember that, for example, milk or bread, they were given to people by members of the family, if that makes sense. So I still remember the shape, the color, the size of the bread. It was brown, and that bread was split in four because just a quarter was given to a member of the family, if you understand what I'm saying. And the milk, you had to go and stay in like queues, like very, very long queues to wait for your turn to pick up a bottle of milk. And you had this little kind of like a card with the days of the month, and every day you could go and, you know, a lady would sign that, okay, you picked up your milk. And this was happening for all the basic foods. We're talking about milk, oil, flour, corn flour, some meat here and there, sugar. So yeah, in that time, people did not have access to many, many foods. I remember stories from my siblings, because I have older brothers and an older sister, where they were remembering when oranges would be in a shop. It was a huge thing to eat an orange or a banana. Or every time a train would pass through Sigishwara, we're talking about international trains, they would slow down, and literally people from the trains, they would throw candies out of the windows, and all the children would wait for that moment and just grab as many as they could. I did not live that because it didn't happen. I was too young, but my brothers, all of them, they did this in my and other children in my neighborhood. So I think one of the reasons, because the revolution happened, it was this, you know, lack of food, lack of access to the basic resources that you needed to live.
So after that, growing up in this post-communist world, as things you mentioned that, you know, institutions stayed in the way they were, there wasn't all of a sudden something brand new. Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up in that development phase for Romania?
I could say it was hard, at least for me and my family, because for some families who had maybe access to a little bit more money or knew somebody who had access to something more or to other resources, they started to kind of rise up, you know, financially and more than that. And families who had, for example, in my family, my parents had six children, because during communism, abortion was illegal, and it was encouraged for women to give birth to many children. And that was not an issue in a way, because at least, the government would provide, you know, bread and oil and so on, so we could survive. But just like I said, for us, it was actually very hard after that, because we didn't really have a lot of money, and there were no jobs because the economy was destroyed, and there were not a lot of jobs available at that time. And just like us, there were like other families who had like just a little just to literally survive day by day.
How would you say their things have shifted over the years comparing that time of growing up to now? What is the economy like in Romania as compared to its past?
I think a huge change in a way, it happened in 2007 when we were accepted to be part of the EU, and that meant for the borders to be open. In a practical way, that meant for us that we could travel in the European countries without a visa. Before that, you had to go through a process of getting a visa to go out of the country. And it was not easy, and they would not give you a visa just like that. So in 2007, when that changed, it was a good, in my opinion, okay? It was a positive and a good thing, but we are living right now the negative in the same time. And I'm going to explain why I'm saying this. Because so people started to go out to Germany, to Italy, to Spain to work, to have more money because they were paid more for very simple jobs, picking strawberries or anything like that or more. They were paid much, much, much more than in Romania. So that means they could send the money into the country and the family started to have a better lifestyle and to afford more things, you know, and to have a better, a better lifestyle, I suppose. So I think the economy definitely changed so much since then, because foreign investors more and more came into the country and invested their money and opened factories and things like that. So they provided more jobs for people here. And then, kind of not to make it too long, but the negative side of things is that so many parents are working in different countries and they leave their children here in best case with their grandparents. But it happens that children are left here with an aunt or a neighbor even. So we are talking about a new style, a new wave of, I can't say orphans because it's too harsh, but just children left behind and growing up maybe without both their parents or with one parent. And from my own experience, I would say even the rate of divorce is higher now because of that.
Well, first, don't worry about going long. We're all here to hear from you and your expertise and story, so you can say as much as you want. But second off, I don't know, this might be a bad question, but do you know any statistics of how many children are left behind by parents that leave to go work in other countries? Because it's fairly common. Would you consider that to be a very common thing for Romanian men and women to leave to work?
Yes. Right now out of my head, I had the numbers in my head at one point of how many children were left behind, but we're talking about hundreds of thousands of children left behind. And we're talking about Romanians kind of an official way that immigrated in different countries. We're talking about millions at this point.
Very high numbers. So I wanted to go back and kind of ask you just about your faith journey. Shared about growing up, but where did your faith journey start in that growing up story?
Mm-hmm. So as I suppose if you come into Romania, you know, and if you ask, oh, are you a Christian or is Romania a Christian country? I can say yes. I looked a little bit online to find out that, you know, kind of more or less 80% of the population here in Romania identifies as part of the Orthodox Church. So myself included, I grew up in an Orthodox family. At that time, when I was kind of young, my mom was more active if I can say that, as a Orthodox Christian. And I remember she taught us, you know, to pray in the evening, but prayers from a book. I still remember a little booklet from where she taught us the prayers. So I knew about God, and I visited, actually during the summer, some monasteries with my mom and with my younger sister, and I knew about God. But honestly, for many years, somehow I couldn't understand the concept of Jesus. Yeah, it was kind of a foreign thing to me to think about Jesus and what he did for us. So it, very simple. When I was, I think, in sixth grade, I heard in my class that from a girl, oh, I went to this club for children where they were teaching English and it's so cool. We sing songs and we have fun. Okay, it sounds very simple, very basic. But my eyes and my ears were like open. I was like, what is that? What is that? I want to go. So I found out where it is, like the address. And it was kind of at the end of my neighborhood because I was living at the other end. My neighborhood is not big, people, but in my eyes, it was big. So, and imagine a very, very, very shy kid. I remember I walked, I don't know how many times to get to their apartment, and I turned around because I did not have the courage to go there. And eventually somehow I did. I knocked at the door and I went in, and that's when I met a friend of mine called Mihaela and an American woman called Amber. And that's what they were doing. They had children in a apartment and they were having fun by singing Christian songs, and they were using these songs to teach English to the children and just having fun. It was basically like a Sunday school program. That's what it was. But for me, it was fascinating. And then one day, this friend, Mihaela, invited me to go to her church. And I said yes, and I went. And at that time, people were gathering in a tiny room, and they were singing, they were praising, they were worship God. And I was there and I could not believe it. I was fascinated by the music, and then that I could sit there and understand what the pastor was preaching. So that was my first experience with a church of like, a different church than Orthodox Church. There is very traditional, and this was kind of opposite of, you know, all the traditional things that I've known till then. And kind of moving it a little bit forward in my life through that church, or more or less, yeah, through the church, I started to go to a youth group called King's Kids. Was part of Youth with a Mission, and I think some listeners would know what Youth with a Mission is. It's a Christian international NGO. And that was one of the best things that happened in my life, because in that youth group, I started to hear about Jesus, understand his love for me, understand his sacrifice. And little by little, the desire in my heart was born to know more about God, to read the Bible, even though at the beginning I was hiding this from my family. I was waking up very early in the morning to read a little bit from the Bible. I was ashamed because I grew up with the idea that if you change your religion, you go to hell. So that was a very hard battle inside that I had to win eventually over this mentality. But that's kind of how I can say I became a newborn Christian.
Would you be willing to share a little bit about the tension you mentioned briefly, but a little bit about the tension between the Orthodox Church and non-denominational Christianity in Romania, just so people could get some context to why it felt like such a burden on your heart?
Yeah, so like I said, the Orthodox Church, it's a very traditional church. They have rules. The doctrine that says this is what you need to do, and this is this is what you have to do, and this is the path that you have to go, and these are the rules that you have to follow. And I did not feel, I don't want to make it as a fact, but I did not feel in my life that they were encouraging me to have any type of a personal relationship with God. It was all about, okay, God is there up there, and you have to follow these rules. And if you don't follow the rules, something bad will happen. And this idea, I actually don't know exactly how this idea was born, that if you change your religion, you go to hell. Because I honestly don't know if this is taught in the Orthodox Church. I don't want to claim that because I don't know. But I grew up with this idea. And even when I was in high school, I started to my close friends, I started to say that I'm a newborn Christian and I'm going to this church, you know. I wasn't hiding it, but I wasn't shouting in the market, I'm doing this. But one friend asked me, "But are you baptized?" And I was like, at that time, I think I wasn't. But I was like, it doesn't matter if I'm baptized or not. Why are you asking me that? And she said, "Well, if you are not baptized, it's fine. But if you get baptized, you know, it's wrong. You can't change your religion," and so on. So, it is kind of a stereotype too. For many years, including myself, I felt ashamed in the same time that I'm a newborn Christian, that I'm going to this charismatic church. If we talk about charismatics or Pentecostals or Baptists or any other type of Christian like that, they're all put in the same pot and seen as not something good in a way. And what I can say for now in the present, I think the mentality is a little bit changed, but in our society, this group of Christians that I just mentioned, we even have a name. And that name is in Romanian, pocăit. You know, pocăit in English means to repent. So it's nothing bad, actually, but it has a negative connotation to it. If somebody calls you like that, that's, you know, it's not good in a way. And it's so sad. One day I was walking, I think maybe 6 years ago or so, I was walking back home from work, and actually a kid, I'm an adult, okay, but a kid just walked past me and shouted, "Pocăită, pocăită," you know, that I'm a new believer, and so on. So again, I think this, I don't know, idea of being a newborn Christian here and there is still taught in the new generation that is something bad, but not in all families. From my experience, I can see young people who understand that it's about a personal choice. It's about believing in God. And just the way you express that is different in these churches. But it's still hard. It's still very hard to explain to people.
So you mentioned starting to tell your friends in high school and sharing about your faith decision. What were kind of next steps in your life story after high school? Where did the Lord take you on your next steps of your journey with Him?
Yeah, is... I can say I had quite an adventure with God for some years in my life. But during high school, I started to have this desire in my heart that I want to go to university. And that was kind of an interesting thing because none of, like, no, my siblings did not go to universities or not even dreaming about it, I suppose. So financially, my family could not support that. But I felt that God will somehow help me and will provide what I needed to do that. And I had the desire to go to law school, actually. And it's so interesting how God literally provided for me to have what I needed to go to law school, to live. Because at 18, I was 18 when I left home, and that was it. I never looked back. I was by myself since then. So he took care of me for 4 years. I was in another city with, it was very hard at the beginning because I had no Christian friends and I missed home like crazy. I missed my friends. I missed my church. I missed to being connected to something real. But God took care of that too. Eventually, I found a church. I found some Christian friends who were there for me. And it was a very good experience, but it was very hard in the same time.
After college, what did you decide to do after you had been faithful and going to university? What was your next step decision that you made?
Yeah, so I came home. Somehow I felt very much connected to Sigishwara. And believe me, not a lot of young people my age do that, come back home. Because like I said, Sigishwara, it's a small town and doesn't give you a lot of opportunities to find jobs, especially if, you know, you have a degree and so on. But I came back and I found a job. And for 2 years, actually, I was maybe to make like a legal counselor, to make it kind of easy to understand. Yeah, like a legal counselor for an NGO that did, at that time, they had a European grant going on. So that's why I had my contract just for 2 years, because the project, it was run just for 2 years. And it was kind of, it wasn't easy. I cried so much at that job, but I learned in the same time a lot. It was my first real job. And after that, honestly, as many people did at that time, and they're still doing it, they go out of the country to find jobs where they can, you know, have more money. I was thinking too at that time, after my 2 years ended, I had no idea what I'm going to do in my life. So I was living with a friend in an apartment. I was paying rent and all that. So I was like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? Like, where's my life going? I was just praying to God, okay, if nothing will happen, I literally have to just go and move in another country and work whatever job I can find. But it was so interesting because in that summer, actually, I went and helped in a youth camp. I helped a friend that was working as a youth leader and a youth worker at a local NGO called Veritas. So I said, I want to go, you know, and to help you. So I did. And then the founder of that NGO saw me. And at the end of the camp, she said, oh, Adela, like, what are you doing? What ideas do you have for future? And, you know, do you mind if we meet and chat? And because I might have a job for you. So that was like an answer to my prayers, because she offered me a job to start working with Veritas, the local NGO. And for at the beginning, I worked with American students who would come to this NGO to do their internships. And after that, little by little, We try different things. It's kind of so interesting, even when I remember now how God worked. Because at one point, this lady called Dorothy told me, okay, Adela, so maybe we could start, you know, something new in the building. So we started a program for children that worked for a while, but then it stopped. And that's when I started It Takes Courage. And it was very hard at the beginning because I had days when nobody showed up or just one teen. And it was very discouraging. And I was like, God, what am I doing? Like, what should I stop? Maybe this is not something that, you know. And after 3 months, little by little, I could see something building up. And now looking back, it's amazing how much this program grew and how much it changed my life and many lives.
Absolutely. It is an incredible program. Would you be willing to share a little bit about It Takes Courage and what some of the core values and core teachings are that you focus on?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I mean, maybe some of the listeners heard Casey Bloom's podcast where she mentions It Takes Courage, and I was so happy when I listened to that. But kind of to connect things, during communism, you are not allowed to say what you are thinking because everybody had to, you know, talk positive about the government and not against it. And people were afraid to think out loud because you never knew who would report you. Your neighbor, your best friend could be somebody who would call in and say, hey, this person said this and that. So they would just come to your door and pick you up, put you to jail maybe, or things like that. So I think this affected, and even now it affects the mentality of people, because we were not taught to think outside the box or to understand our feelings or why do we feel what we feel or how to express ourselves. We're talking about, I think, super basic things. You know, maybe in American society or other countries where, and that's one thing that I really like actually about American society, that you guys express yourself so freely, and it's amazing for me. You know, I worked so hard to be able to express what I feel and to understand why do I feel this and how can I change this, you know. So it takes courage. This is what comes in as something different. I know this type of programs or similar programs in the States happen in the schools, but not here. Here, school is very, very academic and very, very much focused on grades and being the best at everything, not the best in your skills or your abilities or talents, know the best at everything. And it takes courage. The idea was to come up with an environment where youth will feel safe, first of all, to express what they think and that they're listened. I might not agree what, you know, some of them would say sometimes, but I listened. And to learn how to agree to disagree, again, a basic ability, but not everybody can do that, or to understand what it means to be responsible, to have self-control, to forgive, to understand empathy, and I love empathy, honestly. It's one of the best lessons I think that we ever done, and it takes courage because it applies so much in our world to understand what the other is living, especially in a world where we have racism, we have prejudices, we have discrimination, we have stereotypes. I think empathy is the key for these things. And it's not easy to literally put myself in the other person's shoes. So it takes courage is maybe a tool to help the youth of today to understand themselves better and to want to become better human beings, to become better at helping each other and the people around them, I would say.
Do you mind if I ask you, oops, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but do you mind if I ask you about empathy, do you do multiple weeks of empathy or just 1 week of empathy? And what do you do to help teach empathy? Because I agree with you. I think that empathy is the key in a world that is seemingly so full of hate. And it feels like hate is very loud a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And so what are some things, some tools that you use to help communicate the power of empathy to your teens?
Yeah, it always depends on the group that we have at that time, because it happened to talk about empathy like several weeks, because we could, with some groups, we could go into like really detailed and in depth of like the concept and what it means. So like I said, even here in Romania, there are like tensions between different groups. So sometimes we just give examples, like real examples. When I say we, I'm talking about myself and my partner, Casey. we encourage them to think about, okay, because here what's very common, we have beggars in Sighișoara and in other parts of Romania, of course. And many of them, they're like Roma people, okay? And they are very much discriminated. And that's a way of challenging the teens to say, okay, stop for a second. Forget about who you are. Forget about what you have. And think about being born in a family that literally has nothing. You barely have food. You barely have what you put on yourself. And since day one, you're in your mother's, in the best case, in your mother's arms, but then in a woman's arms and used as an item more or less to beg. And then you are growing up day by day and you don't know anything else than this, to go out on the streets and ask for one leu for bread, one leu for, you know, buy something to eat. We use this example to bring in empathy and to understand that it's not so simple. Oh, you see this dirty child, go, you know, like the first reaction is go away from here. But it's not that easy. We're talking about history and we're talking about a lot of years where this group, especially this group of people, were slaves. I mean, they were brought in the country and they were slaves. And worked, you know, the lands worked for the people that were rich at that time in this country. And for so many years, they lived like this and nothing happened. So the cycle could be broken, you know. So then how can I judge them? How can I be mean to them? How can I be rude to them when since, like I said, day one, they have no chance. So, yeah, and other things that right now don't come to my head, but.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. Thank you for sharing that. And I also just want to thank you publicly and say that it's been a great privilege to see, like, get a small glimpses into the way you love teens in your city. And It Takes Courage is just the tip of the iceberg, because that program, while it teaches so many foundational values and it really changes every teen that comes to the program, it also gives you a gateway into the lives of your students, and you truly share a life with those that you serve. And so it's not just It Takes Courage that's as a program that's really successful. It's you and your willingness to serve and teach and listen. And so thank you for setting that example for me, but also for everyone else that gets to see into your life of service for your community and your friends.
Thank you for saying that. But honestly, like, I don't know, some years ago, if anybody would have told me, Adela, you're going to work with youth, I don't know if I would see myself doing that. But I know what God's love did and how my life was changed, because there was one person in my life who started to say, Adela, you're beautiful. Adela, you are kind. Adela, you are smart. I never heard those words in my life till that person started to say these words to me. So honestly, that's where my passion is coming from words that bring life in this teen's lifestyle. Because even though very specifically these teens that come and Takes Courage, they have, if we're talking about material needs, they're all met and more. But they still need God. That hole is still not filled. So that changed my life. And that's where it's coming from, for me at least, you know, to somehow identify that word that maybe it will bring a change in this teen's life. That specific word, you know, and it's wonderful to see the change. Yeah, I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, thank you for adding that. I'm over here getting really teary. I have through your whole story. I just love your story. So is there anything else you want to add about your story, about your town, about your passion for serving teens, anything else at all?
Yeah, I think for sure that the young generation need specifically role models in their life. And I think it's so great that here and there we could provide that, you know, in this community. And I personally am so, so blessed to see It Takes Courage being something significant to their life. And I'm not just making this up. I have their words in written, and not all in written, but I heard from their mouth how this program changed their life. So I feel blessed and I feel privileged that I had the opportunity to be part of their life, to be able to listen to them, to understand a little bit of what they're living, and maybe here and there to even help them how I could. But I'm very blessed to see people as Casey, as Becca, and other people that I can name, but I won't because you don't know them. So, but I name you two because already you're kind of known to the audience. But I'm very blessed that you guys have seen the value in this program. I cannot use words to tell you thank you. And not just for me, and all the support that you've given me, all the encouragement that you haven't given me, but all the change that you brought in their life. So thank you, Becca.
Thank you. That is so kind of you to say. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Adela. I am so grateful that others have the opportunity to hear from you and learn from you, because you are one of my favorite people to learn from. And if I could just sit and listen to you talk and tell stories for days on end, I would, because I just love learning from you, and you teach and lead with such empathy and kindness. So thank you for being a teacher in my life, and thank you for being willing to come and share with our listeners. And I hope that they have nuggets to take away from you today. I know they will. So thank you so much for giving your time for this today.
Thank you again for the invitation, and I hope I was not too boring. So thank you.
You are not boring at all. I'm sure everyone is sitting in, just leaning in, listening, ready to hear more.
Okay. I'm waiting for the feedback then. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Adela.
Thank you. Bye-bye.